Is church good for society? Part of the reason I ask this question is because recently one of the governors, namely that one from California, Governor Gavin Newsom, used a phrase, high risk, low reward. And the context of which he was saying this included churches. And the idea there was that, well, during this time of this pandemic, having church open, churches are non-essential, and there's a high risk and low reward. So the question is, do churches really contribute anything to society? Well, I know of nobody that would be better to answer that question, of course in the affirmative, than Byron White. Dr. Byron White teaches at Baylor University. He's the director of the Institute for Studies of Religion. The website is BaylorISR.org. This is Focal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Dr. Byron Johnson, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
It's great to be back on the show, Jerry.
So, are churches low reward? Do churches contribute anything to society? I'm just going to sit back and listen to you wax eloquent.
Well, you know, churches are phenomenally important to society and important in so many different ways. The bulk of volunteering in America is done by people that come from places like churches, and the bulk of generosity. I mean, there's so much. I mean, Americans give more than $1 billion a day to charities.
Whoa.
And so if you think about that, $1 billion a day, and a significant portion of that comes from people that sit in pews of congregations. So if you just look at dollars, and the contributions of these faith communities, it's staggering. And one study says that religion brings about $1.2 trillion to the U.S. economy each year. So if you just were utilitarian and looked at the dollars and cents of religion, it's stunning. I mean, who responds to homelessness? Well, obviously on the West Coast, homelessness is a problem all over the place, but nowhere more so than in the great state of California and along the West Coast. And so you see these pictures, but that are very disturbing. But if you look to see who's doing the work on the streets that are working with homeless people, you find out that, once again, people that frequent houses of worship, they're in the trenches. They're working with homeless people. They're working with drug addicts. They take on these programs that work with high-risk kids, delinquents, gang members, etc. So time and again, when you look at some of the worst problems that we face in America, these problems are being addressed by people who ask for no credit, and they attend houses of worship. And in cases where you have, like California, where they're not even allowed to assemble because they're high risk, you know, I think that all it would take is a look at the data to understand the value that they bring. But I think that so many people literally are unaware.
Yeah.
And they see, oh, these people congregating. Not that people can do foolish things in congregations. I mean, I heard of one choir that sung and all members of the choir got COVID. None of them were wearing masks, and they weren't distancing. So, you know, people in pews can do silly things too. And so, you know, we need to be smart about that and think of our neighbors. But honestly, you can't think of a more essential group than congregations to American life and civic engagement and social capital and pro-social behavior. So the list goes on. And I think that, you know, if you were to try to shut churches down, which you never can do because people figure out ways to do these things, and they're doing it in record-breaking fashion right now through the Internet. I mean, Facebook is booming in the area of religious, you know, people using technology for religious means. And so, you know, now people do small groups through Zoom. They attend, you know, Sunday school through Zoom, and they watch, you know, church. If they can't make it, they watch it online. So the pandemic has caused a spike in technological innovation for these congregations. And so there's been a lot of negative with the pandemic, but there's also been a lot of positive.
How about impact on marriages as far as church going?
Well, marriage is a big deal, and always has been, always will be. And I think that the pandemic has, in many ways, been difficult for people of faith and people of no faith at all. My own particular bias is that people of no faith particularly struggle because they don't have the same kind of networks that people embedded in communities have. I think one of the things that you're thinking about is if these networks, these faith-based networks and these communities are so vital, what happens when people are not allowed to assemble? It creates problems. I mean, yes, you can do Zoom, and yes, you can talk to people, and we see so much of that happening, but for many people, it's not enough. Nothing really does replace seeing people in person and you know, being the beneficiary of that support that's, tangible and in person. So I think that has created issues that are, we may not know the extent to which, as some people have said, depression or suicide, even abuse. There are so many kind of unanswered questions out there, but I think that as soon as this vaccine, of course, becomes available to the masses, hopefully we're on the verge of a point in time when we can, again, begin to meet in person. I think we're all looking forward to that.
I guess what I'm asking, though, too, in addition to everything you just said, do churches in any way positively impact marital relationships or relationships with people in general?
Oh, yeah. Church is enormously protective. Protective for marriages. I mean, if you want to, live a long life, you should go to church. It's good for your health. People tend to live longer and tend to have less physical complications as a result of attending church. Now, why is that? Why does that happen? Well, you would hope that people actually learn from going to church about ways in which they can live their lives healthier. But we know from data that, church attendance and involvement is highly protective of marriages. And so the extent to which people are not allowed to participate in that way could be problematic. I mean, we won't know until we see data from the pandemic that would allow us to make some kind of assessment. But again, I think here you're seeing, I mean, in my congregation, I just got a notification that they're going to be doing a big marriage seminar that will be virtual. They used to do these things in person, of course.
Sure.
And but now they're trying to figure out how can we do this in another way. Is it as good? It's certainly not as good. But I think if you're looking for a silver lining here, you could argue that in the future, when things do go back to normal, all that we've learned through technology will still be very, very valuable and will also be used for people that maybe are not able to get out and travel for whatever kind of reason. But yes, churches are protective on multiple fronts. They help people cope. They help them live longer, happier lives. So if you take that option away from people, you're hurting people. And so that's why the news that some things, people are allowed to do, but things like church they're not allowed to do, or houses of worship. You have to know that there's some harm associated with those kinds of decisions.
Yeah, in fact, the phrase is often used is non-essential. And some of these same liberal governors that are saying churches are non-essential are turning around and saying abortion clinics are essential.
Yeah, I just think that this, again, is sheer ignorance. they don't know the data, number one. And number two,
Wait, let me interrupt you.
When you say
they don't know the data, you're talking about the data that churches are good for society. That's really what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't know that data. They don't read that literature. They have stereotypes of what they think about religious people, and oftentimes these stereotypes are completely wrong.
Where can I read that literature? The literature that church is good for you. Show me, name a book, point it to us so we can read this for ourselves.
Sure.
Maybe
one
a thing
is
you've
called
read.
America's Blessings by Rodney Stark.
Okay, now that's 2012. I've read that book. I read it word for word. Those statistics are 12, you know, from 2012, that's 8 years old as of this recording. Yeah. Is it still basically valid, all those statistics?
Oh, absolutely, because what Stark does there is to kind of go back in time and bring it up to the present. So, you know, there are plenty of books like Bowling Alone that was written in 2000 by Bob Putnam at Harvard University. That book is as timely as it was when it was written in 2000, where he talks about what is social capital, how do we define it, and where does social capital come from? And, you know, his book basically makes the argument that social capital, which is everything that's good about America, you know, people caring about their neighbors and working with each other and creating these trustworthy relationships, helping each other. I mean, where does social capital come from? And he argues you can find it in houses of worship. About half of all social capital is what he calls spiritual capital.
Wow.
That book's 20 years old. Is it still relevant? Of course it's still relevant. So, you know, can we write more books? We absolutely should be writing more books on that very topic to bring home the case that these houses of worship are absolutely essential. And I think there's not only an ignorance, because a lot of people don't read these articles or these books, but I think there's downright hostility towards communities of faith, because communities of faith sometimes have teachings that run counter to conventional narratives on any number of topics, like abortion.
Yeah.
And so because of that, there are those leaders that tend to completely wipe a swath off the map, and it's kind of like I guess when we have our next disaster, our next hurricane, or our next flood, are you saying you don't want those same communities that you're marginalizing, you don't want them to come to the aid of society like they do every single time there's a natural disaster? So I just think that this, you know, there's ignorance, and B, there's hostility that's misguided.
Yeah. Okay, we have 1 minute left to wrap up. Anything else you want to say? You mentioned suicide, but somewhere I heard or read a statistic that there's been a 40% increase in suicides because of the pandemic. Does church going and the body of Christ help in some ways reduce that number of suicide for those who avail themselves of that?
Yep. It's protective. It reduces the act of suicide. It reduces what we call suicidal ideation. So when asked this question, have you thought of taking your own life? There are plenty of people that would say yes to that question, even though they haven't attempted. Church attendance is protective of even the thought of suicide. And so, yes, it's enormously protective. I don't know. I mean, that statistic that you just gave, I hope it's inaccurate, but I fear it's accurate. And that this is one of the devastating things of, I think, locking everyone down and not realizing the consequences of those kinds of decisions for people's health.
Okay, we're out of time. By the way, we were talking about books, and you wrote a classic called More God, Less Crime. Dr. Byron White's work can be seen at BaylorISR.org. ISR stands for Institute for Studies of Religion, which he directs at Baylor. Thank you so much, Dr. Johnson. Great to have you on the program. Always a
Thanks,
pleasure.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you now. Bye-bye.